So, Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzl Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzl, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzl Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petzl.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. It's going to be a little bit different. This is a little different. I'm going to actually talk with my pastor today, Paul Hatfield. He's the pastor of The Pursuit, and which is, of course, a very large church here in the Valley, a growing church, and one that he and his wife planted a little over 10 years ago. We'll get the firm details here in a moment. But you might be wondering why. Why would we be talking to a pastor on a money show? And the answer is he wrote a book, The Generosity Revolution. And I've talked about this for years and years and years, and honestly, I don't know why I haven't had him on here before. Because money is so incredibly important. It is part of our spiritual existence. It's part of our secular existence. It's both. It's mixed. It's important to people. I don't care if you're involved in any religion or you're agnostic. It makes no difference whatsoever. Money is important, critically important. And also, I think particularly for those that are spiritually feel spiritual about what they're trying to do, their walk, if you will, in this world. Because I think most people get money wrong. The Bible spends an extraordinary amount of time talking about money and how important it is. So it's not a new concept. We think today this is new. That there's, you know, if there weren't credit cards, people would get money right. But when Jesus was walking the earth, they didn't get right either. It's an incredibly big human problem on both sides. People are greedy. They hoard money. People don't go to work. People don't ever save. They don't take care of their families on the other side. So it's a big balancing act. It's very, very important. It's the number one reason couples fight is about money. Really? It's a big deal. But we always deal with it in a secular way. Well, Paul Hatfield dealt with it both in a secular and made a nice blend. It's called The Generosity Revolution, his book. It's good. It's a good dive into how we are affected by money and how to change that dynamic. So we'll get to that in a moment. But I wanted to, we'll get to Paul in a moment, and we'll talk a little more deeply about it. You see, when we stop and we think about this, and we think about, in a spiritual way, churches, you know, when churches talk about money, what do we know they're doing? They're saying, we need more money. Give us more money. But it's really deeper than that. It's how we are affected by money, how we deal with money day to day. And it is an incredibly, as I said earlier, incredibly important point to our secular existence. What we do with money. How we teach our kids. I deal with it every day. I see it have every day, day in and day out for 35 years. How people get money right. How some people get money wrong. And how muddied the waters are within families. And I think really how the wires get crossed, not just with advertising because everybody's out, you know, thinking they have to have the neatest, coolest gadgets today, but how people misunderstand giving, being generous, and how it changes our entire spirit. And I don't just mean in a religious sense. Giving is something, being generous is something that humans don't just feel good about. It changes who they are. money is an important topic. We need to get it right. That doesn't just mean do we save the first 10% or 20%, that we have the right 401ks. It's do we have the right balance of money in our life. So I've talked about it a lot. I've been wanting to talk to Paul about it, about his book, and finally we're going to get to do that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and take a break right now, and then when we come back, we're going to talk to Paul Hatfield about his book, The Generosity Revolution, and about what his perception is in going through it. Because when you write a book, you know what? When you write a book, this is focused energy. I mean, there is some deep, deep learning going on. You're just really focused on one topic. There's insight. I love people that write books. It just takes such focus and such energy in one particular area. I always want to talk to authors about what it is they learned, because they all have insight, all of them, because it's such a deep focus that you have to have for such a long period of time. So anyway, let's go ahead and I want to save the time for Paul. So we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Paul Hatfield about money.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. On 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo. This is a special recorded program. Special for me, it's something, as I mentioned in the first segment, that I wanted to do for a while. And I know for people it's one of those things where you look at it and you go, well, why would we be talking to a pastor about money, Dave? We tune in to find out about the markets and what's going on. But, you know, we have always talked on this program about, if you will, a higher level look at things. And I don't mean that from a, you know, we're the really smart people and everybody else but is dumb. But there's plenty of programs out there that are talking about what you should buy and sell and trading strategies and nonsensical things. And as you know, we like to try to talk about things. How does money affect us? Why are we so fearful in a world of such abundance? I mean, questions like that are very important to how we manage money, how we think about money, and whether you invest appropriately and you invest in your time and energy. And besides, as I mentioned before, people that write books, that's some pretty focused energy right there. So I think there's some insight to gain regardless from people who write books. And with that, I want to introduce Paul Hatfield, who is a pastor of The Pursuit, my pastor over at The Pursuit, and which is an extremely vibrant church here in the Valley. It has two campuses now, right, Paul?
Yes, sir.
Bogus Basin as well as out in Eagle.
Yes.
Congratulations. You and your bride came up here from California when?
It was end of 2003 we arrived to start The Pursuit. So.
And how many people? There's got to be 1,000 people in The Pursuit.
Yeah, typical between the two services or the two campuses, about 1,600-1,700 people per Sunday that we have.
Per Sunday.
Kids and adults, we count everybody, so yeah. Everybody matters.
Everybody counts, don't they? Yeah,
that's
okay.
Right.
That's quite a few people on a Sunday, so you must have people rotating in and out, 2,000 to 3,000. Does that kind of equate to
somewhere
that?
Somewhere we'd guess about 2,200, 2,300 that would say, yeah, I regularly go to The Pursuit. And then, of course, many others that show up every once in a while, we'll take them whenever they come.
So. That's good. That's good. Well, let's start with why. Your book is called The Generosity Revolution, and it's an intriguing title. And, of course, I've heard you speak on this before you wrote the book. It's something that's been in your heart for a long time.
Yes.
What, though, prompted you to say, I'm going to write a money book?
That's a great question. You know, it's one of those things where it's an issue that everybody deals with, that, you know, is important to everybody, whether they recognize it or not, whether they consider themselves planners or you know, whether they're focused or not. It impacts everybody, and the Bible has so much to say on money. People often would say, well, what is the church even talking about money? And it's like, well, the the Bible does. It talks about it more actually than any other subject. If you take it cumulatively through the whole Bible, it's you can't get away from it. And the reason is because money is incredibly powerful to our hearts. It has a pull on our hearts. What we do with it has a pull on our hearts. And so really it's about our hearts, and God wants us to live a life that's blessed, a life that is joyful, and He knows that, and how we handle our money has a lot to do with how that life's going to be lived out and enjoyed.
Right. Now, it's a tricky thing. We you know, I always deal with it, of course, in a secular basis, and I think it still spills out some of the principles of the Bible, but it still is something that couples, it's number one or number two reason that they fight. And we have obviously an epidemic of divorces in this country, both from Christians and non. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to matter statistically at all. And so we're not getting this right, are we?
Yeah, that's, I would say, across the board, you know, whether you're a church person or an unchurch person, we stink at how to handle money. And it is impacting absolutely every area of our lives.
Does. We had, you know, and so that's why I really wanted to talk about this too, because it's not, this isn't really a topic at all that is geared towards, if you will, like you say, churched or is it non-churched? It's everybody messes this up. You have a lot of practical things in here that would have nothing to do with, you know, how even giving your money away. But you can't give money away. You can't be generous. You can't be generous in time if you don't have time. If you don't have margin in your life, if you don't have excess finances, you can't be generous financially either, can you?
Yeah, no, that's really, you know, the thrust of the book. I think for most people, if they think about generosity, and there's one, the fear of, you know, can I be generous? What happens to me if I'm a giver? But I think for a lot of people, there is some desire to do good with money. You see something, every one of us has a pull, and there are so many things that are worth giving to. I mean, and this is, you know, again, wherever you are, whatever your religious persuasion or lack of religious persuasion, there's something that grabs your heart. There's some disaster that you see that you think, man, I would love to help relieve that. You know, there's adoption that you see, and you're like, man, I'd love to participate in that. The sex trafficking issue that we're seeing just pop up everywhere and really dominate our culture. To people would say, man, if I could make a difference in somebody's life, I would love to do that. But the reality is that the way that we handle our money is preventing us from being able to. We just keep saying, well, I would love to do that, but I can't. I don't have any extra right now. And so the book's really about, well, how do we change things around to where we actually center our finances in such a way that we can be generous instead of basing it on consumption, which is, I think, how most of us are wired and what we think is the reason I earn money, the reason I save is so I can spend it on me and enjoy it for me, and to shift that and say, okay, what if I did what I did in such a way and, you know, earned and saved and worked and all of those things so that when those opportunities arise, that something grabs my heart, there's something I can do about it instead of just regretting that I've put myself in a position where I can't help.
You know, it's interesting. I'm going to spin that around too, because it's getting money right is so super important, even if you don't think of it in any kind of a spiritual sense. You don't care what your spouse or your future spouse thinks about money, which of course is absurd. That's absurdly saying none of that stuff matters. It all matters.
Yes.
But coming back to just a pure selfish thing, which is what we often think of money as, if you don't get it right, you can't do anything long term about your own freedom. You are going to be a slave to paying the bills. You're going to be a slave to whatever job you can find and never have an opportunity to step out, go out on your own business, go do your own thing, take a break from what it is you're doing, and go. You can't ever have that kind of freedom.
Yeah, I've said, and I say it in the book, you know, most people live in debt, right? We're in debt as a culture, and that is bondage. That's the Bible says the borrower's the lender's slave. Like you are a slave Visa to, you know, Toyota to whoever you owe, you're a slave to them. And the reality is, you know, I don't have options if I'm in debt. And that's true. Again, take whatever your goals are. You know, I don't have it. Maybe generosity is not your goal, but whatever it is that you'd say, man, I don't have options when I'm in debt. But when there's money in the bank, mm-hmm. you know, when you've turned that around, it is freedom. You have options to do whatever it is that you want to do. And those can be, again, for yourself, for your family, for others, whatever those goals are. When you're in debt, when everything's allocated out, there is no freedom. There are no options. But when there's money in the bank, when you've got, you know, you got stocks that you can liquidate, you have options. And that's great freedom.
It really is. So it is. It's a lot. Getting money right is about being free, isn't it? It's free. In your case, when you're talking about it in a spiritual sense, it's freedom of your heart is in the right place. You, in a pure secular sense, you might say, I have freedom to go do the things I want to do later on.
Yep, absolutely.
But it's always a choice, isn't it? It's a choice of today. Do we live for right this second and go with whatever impulse we have right now? Because any decision we make today is going to be a choice that we've made. I would rather go get drinks with the boys than to have a college education for my kid. That is literally the choices people make. They just don't want to ever, nobody would ever make that choice.
Yeah.
No, hey, well, I'm not a jerk. That's not me. I get that, but that's the beginning of understanding what our choices really are, where our heart is, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, that idea of, man, when we spend it, it's gone. You know, when we spend it, that's it. There's one of the, I think, key principles in the book that really helps people. And again, I would say, whatever your goals are, I talk about rounding down, you know, taking the opportunity to round down every time you spend, because every time you spend is an opportunity to spend less.
Yeah.
And to think, okay, well, I got, you know, things are so tight, and it's like, could you spend a little bit less, you know, when you're going out to eat? Could you spend a little bit less when you need to buy that car? Could you spend a little bit less on vacation? Our culture is all about round up. You know, I can afford that. I think we can afford that. Yeah, a little bit more a month, a little bit more this. It's only, you know, a few bucks here. And you add all that up, and it's a lot. And so to think, man, how could I spend less on these little things that don't matter? And certainly, in comparison to college education, where you go out to dinner, it really doesn't matter, right? I mean, you know, you compare those two, there's no comparison,
right.
And yet the choice is on.
It's top ramen at home when you think about it, right?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, like I'm going to jip my kid out of it. No, right?
Yeah. But that's, I mean, if we're not putting away what we should for college education, but we're living it up, going out to eat all the time, that's exactly what we're doing.
We don't stop to really recognize everything's a choice.
Yeah, and spending. Taking the opportunity to spend less. My daughter asked the other day, we live right behind Target, and she asked, hey, can I go to Target? And she had some spending money, and I said, you can absolutely just leave your money at home. And she said, why? And I said, well, you know, if you go over there, if there's something you really want, you can walk back home and get your money. And you know, but my guess is there are going to be things that you're going to go, you know, but I don't want to come back for it. And it's like, you know what? You didn't really need that in the first place then. And
it's pretty good.
So, you know, leave
maybe
that.
Maybe us adults could not take our credit cards when we go window shopping.
That's
right.
Go to the mall without anything in your wallet. And if there's that deal that's so great, ask them to hold it for you. Go home and get your stuff and come back and buy it.
Wow. I think your expenses might go down pretty instantly.
That's
there.
Right.
Pretty instantly. That's for sure. Hey, you know, you started this book. I want to, you know, I think with quite the challenge to people here, and I thought that was very interesting. You just to start off with a quote: "I will do whatever it takes to be as generous as possible with the money that God has entrusted to me." Wow. Now you stop and you think about that. That's quite a challenge, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely contrary to what, you know, how we live and how we're wired. I mean, we look at what our goals are and the things that we say, you know, we'll do whatever it takes to get that next thing, right? Or to, I mean, we'll put ourselves in to credit card debt at ridiculous interest rates to have something that we know is going to decrease in value immediately. You know, we'll borrow to get these things that don't matter. And when, you know, we would say, well, but then, you know, with generosity, well, you know, I'll get to it. I'll get to it. And it's like, what if we said, no, I'm going to be that, you know, persistent, driven, but to be generous, to bless other people. And I think, and this is something, whether you're a religious person or not, to say, you know, do you really think with all of the need in the world that what you have, that however you got it, you know, maybe credit God for that, but whatever it is, your hard work, whatever, however it is that you got what you got, that it is best used if it's all just consumed by you. You know, I think with so many needs in the world, with so many other people who are hurting and struggling, there's better things we can do than just consume it.
It's true. But I think it's also, you know, what you're saying, of course. But when you also put it, let me just flip that over for a second here, because when we come back from this break, I want to talk about this a little bit. So if we flip that over and say, really, whatever you have and what I have collectively, even all of, you know, the whole church, it can't solve the problems in the world. It won't solve the problems. They're here for good. Isn't giving really about you, not so much fixing everything?
Yeah, I think it's a both and. You know, you can make a difference in a life.
At least on a life.
In a life, right.
But a big difference
in your
life.
A big difference in yours, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, we do have to take a quick break, and when we come back, let's talk about that. And I also want to talk about fear and why, you know, fear is huge in money, and it is huge in giving.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Idaho's place to talk.
Hello and welcome to the special edition of Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, of course, and I'm here with Paul Hatfield. Paul Hatfield is the pastor of The Pursuit. And also, I think you should give your website here, but he's also the author of The Generosity Revolution, which is I found it a very interesting read. It's very practical in its application, but it also was challenging. It's challenging. There's no question about that. So if you don't want to be challenged, don't read the book because it'll challenge you.
That's right.
I don't care who you are or how you think you have it right. I think I've got a lot of the money concepts right, but I was challenged in a lot of ways. I'll tell you one thing it did. I realized you talked about rounding down in our consumption, but one of the chapters you talk about in here is rounding up in your tipping.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, that tipping's a hard one, though.
That's right.
I'm a little better tipper than I was, thanks
right.
to you. So, anyway, we were talking about at the break, Paul. We were talking a little bit about what this does to the giver, and I don't just mean like you're living radically generous, but even the whole process over the years of giving to anything, changes our hearts, doesn't it? I mean, it's a big deal for the giver, not just, you know, oh, now I'm so super generous, this person now can get a meal or whatever.
Yeah, I think, you know, we look at the needs that are out there, and definitely, you know, a lot of our giving is need driven, and that it pulls at us. But the reality is that when we give, I mean, Jesus said, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And that, you know, what he means by that is, look, if you put your money toward something, your heart's going to be drawn there. And great illustration for your listeners for sure is you can find a company that you've never heard about, know nothing about, read an article about them that shows promise, and you invest in them. How much do you care about that company now that you hadn't heard of yesterday? It's like,
right.
I've invested there. And so, you know, when you think of your giving and your heart following your money as you give to whatever it is, you know, whatever, whether it's just a person, an organization, a church, that your heart is going to move toward people and is gonna move toward people, and you're gonna have more compassion for people because you're putting your money there.
No doubt about that. I noticed you closed the book, however, with "Can I ever spend money on myself?"
That's right.
So can you?
Yeah, it's and there, you know, people go both ways, and I think you can find again certainly religious people in religious circles that would say, you know, there's no, you know, you just live poor, you know, with so much need in the world, how could you enjoy anything when there are so many people that are hurting, there are so many other things you can do. And I really believe this is, you know, this is a challenging area for people. I think most of us don't have a problem, you know, with not being willing to spend enough on ourselves.
Yeah.
Most of us go the other way, but it is, you know, I tell the illustration, if I gave my son, you know, and said, hey, it's your birthday and here's whatever, $50 for your birthday. And he said, well, that's great. I can't keep that. I want to give it to this person over here. And you're like, oh, that's cute. You know, what a generous little heart. Because you did that, I'm going to give you, you know, another $50. And they're like, well, I want to give that away. And you're like, okay, well, you know, here's, and everything they give, they're like, feel almost this guilt and shame of, I don't deserve this, or I can't keep this when there's so much need. At some point I go, man, there's something wrong that my son can't accept a gift from me and keep a gift, but he feels like he has to pass that gift on. And,
right.
And you know, the Bible teaches that what God gives us, you know, it's a gift that he blesses us. He loves to give to his children. And so, you know, when we have the opportunity and we're blessed that we can enjoy some of what God gives us, I believe that is appropriate, and he loves seeing us enjoy his gifts.
So it's breaking it both ways, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've, you know, talk with people. I deal with people with, you know, maybe smaller budgets sometimes, and people setting up
sure.
their budgets. And I mean, even for me, honestly, like, you set up the budget ahead of time, and you give. I mean, we give first, and we try to give generously a healthy percentage first, you know, and then we save, and then we have what we feel is okay for us to live on, which is right based on what our needs are. We have five kids, and, you know, what those needs are, we live on that, and we are not to feel guilty about spending that money that we prayed about it. You know, we set what we thought was a responsible budget, and then, man, we can enjoy those things. Now, sometimes can we take a little bit of our spending money and give it to meet a need? Absolutely, we do that. We do that a lot, but we don't live, you know, like in this fear mode of, well, is it enough? Am I giving enough? You know, spending money on your family, taking my wife on a cruise, I've finally figured out it's a very good use of God's money.
Yeah.
You know, investing in our marriage, I mean, spending money on the kids, letting them see things, family vacations, you know, those types of things. Like, I mean, at the end of your life, actually, my dad shared with me, and I never felt gypped or ripped off growing up. My parents were very generous. My dad passed away several years ago, but I remember him sharing with me that he regretted not doing enough recreation with our family, not creating enough. He said it, creating enough memories
yeah.
for the kids as a family. And it's like, you know, I mean, those opportunities, you know, not to just say, well, then travel's what it needs to be about, and because
sure.
it doesn't have to be, you know, these huge expenses, but to say, like, man, if you're so concerned about saving money and being generous that you don't take time to enjoy your family, you don't take time to invest in your marriage, you don't create those opportunities for your kids to see, wow, God's good and God's blessed us, then I think, you know, I think you're missing out, and maybe you need to swing the pendulum back the other way and say, maybe I need to round up on our spending a little bit, you know, because all I'm doing is just sitting on these accounts and looking at my account balances and thinking that's where life is, and life isn't found in our possessions, whether they're, you know, whether that's just money in the bank or cars that we drive. That's not where life is.
Right, right. It's not, but it's okay. But at the same time, oftentimes, and I don't think my perspective on this is remotely unique, that people do, and you touched on this, that people oftentimes in churches judge those that have a good lifestyle aren't doing their part.
Yes.
They should be more buttoned down, that they're... And they, yet they have no idea, do they?
Yeah, we're quick
to judge others, including in churches we judge others.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you tell us to quit judging.
You know, we actually in a series right now, sermon series right now, talking about this issue that we have, God gave us the principles and God leads us in our hearts to know how we're called to handle the money he's entrusted to us. Not to take those how we live and then try to put that. I mean, that's what religion has done forever, right? And people in whatever church saying, "Well, I think this, and so therefore it should be true of everybody else." And it is our responsibility. It's my responsibility to handle the money that God's entrusted to me in the way that I think He's calling me to, without judging other people, without feeling like, "Well, I can't believe they went there. I can't believe they drive that. Look what they could have done with that money." Instead we can drive ourselves crazy with that, and it doesn't do us any good. It certainly doesn't do our relationships any good.
Mm-hmm.
If we're worrying about what everybody else does with their money all the time, instead of focusing on what we're called to do as individuals.
I feel like there are so many people, both in the church and out of the church. But one of the things that I'm frustrated with is the people in the church living fearfully. They want to build bunkers, and they want to go get generators, and all they do is they get on and blog about that Obama's this and Obama's that, and he's going to destroy the world and all these things. And it's not that we shouldn't be aware of what's going on in the world. We should be involved politically, but why are we living in so much fear when really we're taught don't do that?
Yeah, it's honestly, for me, I think it's just losing sight of who's in charge, really. Who's really in charge? And I mean, if we believe that God is the ruler over the earth, then that there's a lot of security that comes in that. And it's no longer, my security is no longer what I have and what I do. I mean, my security is, it's really regardless of what I do and how my money goes. I know that somebody else is in charge and somebody's got it under control, and so we can live in freedom in that, and we don't have to obsess with worry about what might happen when we have security in a relationship with God.
You know, it is still living in fear is absurd. It's joyless. It's terrible.
Yes.
It's just a dead heart.
Yeah. There's no.
It just makes no sense to me.
It's no good that comes from that. It's preventing us from, investing and growing, whether it's preventing us from giving, whatever it is. Just, studies. It's really bad for your health, right?
Yeah,
I mean, the stress of that. God certainly did not design us to live that way.
That's right.
And we find out that out if we do live that way, it ruins a lot of things.
Yes, it does. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to finish up here with Paul Hatfield, the author of The Generosity Revolution and the pastor of The Pursuit. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, and I'm here with Paul Hatfield, who is the pastor of The Pursuit, which I, haven't mentioned before, but I've got to get this out there, because you've got such a great website. I mean, there's so many tools out there for people, different series that you've done over the years, teaching, preaching, if you will. But you have a little different style. Some of it is pretty open, where you share your dramas and issues pretty openly.
Yeah.
But anyway, and that was probably the biggest one I remember is the Broken series, right? Wasn't that the...
Yeah, my wife and I shared kind of our journey, really the most explosive times of growth at the Pursuit. 4 years of exploding growth were the most explosive times at home in our marriage. And I can actually remember getting ready. My wife and I sat up on the platform together and shared our story, and yep. It was a shock to people. I remember just opening the door for her when we were getting ready, like, are you ready for this? Like, taking a deep breath, because it's like, wow, people are now going to know that we're just like
them. Dark sheep. Yeah.
We're just like them. We struggled, too, and we battled some really hard things, and just continue to try to be real, you know, real people, and present who we are, and you know, not try to make people think, man, I'm so great. I don't ask people to call me Pastor Paul. I'm just Paul.
Yeah.
I'm just a guy who's been called into a role, and so yeah, it's a pretty awesome opportunity we have.
Well, it's pretty amazing, and yes, you guys did open up a lot.
So. Yeah, that's for sure.
You did. That was very courageous. But the reason you're here today is to talk about the Generosity Revolution and the book you wrote, which I also want to say, look, we're not here to promote the book, but I think it's a great book. I think people should think about it. And the reason is because this isn't easy. It's not easy to get money right.
Yeah.
You think you have it right. You think you've read about it. I think I'm pretty right. And I'm still challenged. And I have to have this up and think about it from time to time and think about it. You know, when I this tightwad, I kind of reach in. Okay, give them $2 instead of one.
That's right.
You know, it's just that, you know. So there's different things for different people.
Yes.
Some people try to show off their money. It's just that balance we're trying to find.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but anyway, all the proceeds from this book go back to the church, not to you.
Yeah, just didn't really feel like I felt like it was a message that God gave me while pastoring at the Pursuit, that it's been tested on the people at the Pursuit.
That's,
you know,
right.
We've talked about these things, and you know, the Pursuit pays me and my wife works, and we didn't feel like, you know, we needed to try to increase what we had through the book, but just so there was absolute clarity on why we're getting the message out there is because we believe that it's a message worth getting out there, not because I think we need to expand our personal, you know, resources.
I want to talk a little bit about this and how people, if you will, I heard a sermon years ago, actually a couple different ones, and I wanted to kind of get your feedback on this too, that some of the greediest people in the world have little resources. They spend all their time thinking about, if only I'd win the lottery. And I thought about that, and I thought, because we always perceive that the wealthy are greedy.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very interesting twist, and I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, greed is not so much about what we have. It's about the condition of our heart. And so this, you know, it's the people who have the desire for more, and this desire to have what we don't have. And, you know, I've described contentment, or you could even just sing, you know, what's rich in your mind? You know, what's being rich, you know? And it would be, I mean, I think we could describe it as saying, you know, being rich or having arrived financially would be that I have the money to buy anything that I really, really want.
Right.
And there's, you know, two ways for that to be true. One is to change your income and the amount of money you have. The other is to change what you want. Because if I'm content, then, and I have everything that I really, really want, then I'm rich, and it's a condition of my heart. And so I think, yeah, the people who live thinking, man, I wish I had, I want, and in this desire that they have, even if they don't have the resources, even if they, you know, don't have the money. And I would say for those of you who are
you know, Christians who follow Jesus, I would go, well, if that's your motivation, why would God bless you? Why would God give you more if your desire is just to get stuff? If that's what drives it, and I mm-hmm. think if you can say, you know, I'm content with what I have. Just had this thought, you know, when I go up to the mountains and see the Sawtooth Mountains, you know, I can appreciate the Sawtooths without wanting to own them, right? without thinking, well, I want
to possess
this. I want to possess this. I want to take this. I want to, you know, take this home with me. It's like, well, that's ridiculous, you know. Well, why can't we learn to appreciate other things? You know, why can't we see a car drive by and go, wow, that's really an awesome car without there being the, but I want it.
Well, we've got a few minutes left, and I said I had a couple little sermons, so, you know, there are things that I remember kind of along these lines, right? Again, I know they speak to the contentment issue, but that really is what money is about, isn't it? It's or how we've tried to find that balance of being content. But this idea that the people who are you know, a little greedy with money are the people, you know, if I make our household makes $70,000, well, those would be the people that are making more than $100,000. For the people that are making $120,000, it's obviously the people that are making $200,000 and $400,000. And if I can speak on it, almost, I don't want to drive this into a political sense, but we see this division in this country, this idea of a 1% and a 99%. So if you have, then we should just take? Or do we? Anyway, I think it's a big question of how we feel or judge others.
Yeah we always, it's easy to find somebody and talk about comparison. It's mm-hmm. easy to find, and we like to compare ourselves to people who are doing better than us.
Right.
You know,
perceived better than us.
Perceived, at least they appear to be. Where, you know, maybe a good challenge is, well, let's compare ourselves to the rest of the world. You know, let's go visit. I adopted two kids from the Congo.
Yeah.
You know, go visit the Congo. I don't care what you have in this country. When, you know, my kids talk about they were cold at night because they didn't have a blanket. You know, they didn't have that. They didn't have much food, you know, where they were. And you look at that and go, you know, no matter how bad we have it, we're doing really well. We're very blessed to live in the country that we're in, and our problems, you know, are small compared to what other people are dealing with. We have the opportunity to lose more money, you know. I mean, you can get bummed about losing money. It's like you realize you lost more than some people, than most people in the world will ever even have. We're very blessed, and I think should live like we're blessed and to be able to be a blessing to others.
Right, right. Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it, is to be thinking of how to be more generous. But that just serves to say, let's put money in its rightful place, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a great, money is a great tool. I mean, it's something, working is a privilege, it's not a burden, it's not a curse.
No.
That's a twist from the Bible, you know, believe in creation, as the Bible says it, we're given the opportunity to work, it's a blessing to work. And so you go work hard. Earn the money, and then do right with it. Do good with it. And that's caring for others, caring for yourself.
Yeah. Paul Hatfield, thank you so much for coming in today. Appreciate it.
It's been an honor. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great. And if you want more information about The Pursuit, about Paul's thoughts, shoot him an email over at thepursuit.org. Also, there's lots of other, really, it's a very vibrant website and lots of tools if you have different things you wanted to look into. So check it out, thepursuit.org. Thanks again, Paul.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk.
you to the grand opening of our newest Sam's Clubs, located on Highway 44 in Middleton. And today only, Saturday, July 5th, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., everything in the new Middleton store is on sale. This is something we've never done before, but we want to say we're glad to be here and to encourage everyone to come see our beautiful new store and get in on some amazing deals. For one day only, and only at Middleton, you'll save big on Sam's Clubs lawn food, Humagreen, Thrive, Gramazee's dog and cat food, and everything else in every department of the new store. Pet supplies, live animals, freshwater fish, livestock and small animal feed, and everything else. We'll have prize drawings, a bounce house for the kids, hot dogs and soft drinks for a donation. But this grand opening sale is today only from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. and only at our new store located off exit 25 on Highway 44 in Middleton. So don't miss it, and we'll see you there.
Nobody knows like Sam's.
And thank you again for joining us. This is hour number two, and I am live this hour. Hour number two of Money Matters upcoming, and of course, these are my opinions only. And of course, we're not here to tell you what to buy, 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 and sell, sell, sell. That's just silly, and there's plenty of that going on out there. I am off enjoying the 4th of July up here with a beautiful McCall. My gosh, it was wonderful weather, of course. And also just enjoying some time with my dad, play a little golf up here, and I appreciate you putting up with me on the phone for the second hour today. So we've got a lot to talk about. We can talk about the daily stuff, right? The fact we hit 17,000 on the Dow and things like that. But I want to talk about why. Why are we hitting all-time highs? Not just, you know, it's another number, and here's a reporting, and let's make up something that flew by. In the news, okay, which is what happens. And I think it's really important that we get our minds wrapped around that. It is so important for us to understand that hitting a number on the Dow, or their Dow is up today, it's down tomorrow, whatever it is, isn't caused most of the time by anything that happened that day. Nothing else. It's just constantly talked about. So we always have this idea that things are happening to the market or in the market every single day that are so impactful, and that we can be up on them and more aware of them, then we would be better traders. We would be better at managing our money. And it's simply not true. It's just not true at all. And so it's important to understand, if you can take a step back, why in my career has the market moved from 750 to 17,000? It's an astounding gain. Astounding percentages. But it was also astounding for the 30 years prior to that, when you're moving from, 100 to 750. Now, it's moved a lot higher in the last 30-plus years. Now, we sit on all-time highs, and people sit around and fuss and wring their hands about it being too high. I can't come in now. Maybe I missed the last 5 years, bull market, okay, fine. That's frustrating, but I'm not coming in now. And, of course, they've been saying that for thousands of points. And I get the idea. I get the thought process of, hey, we're up a lot. I'm smarter than that. I'm not going to come in at some market high. But the reality is, we have to take a step back. And why is the market where it is? Why is it here? Why has it moved from less than 1,000 to 17,000? Why? And as we look at it, and you stop and you think, well, because the world continues to advance. The economies of the world continue to grow. Generally speaking, the populace of the United States and other countries, the world, continue to increase the standard of living. relentlessly, decade after decade. But you see, we lose that perspective in the day-to-day noise, don't we? I can't come in now because fill in the blank. I don't want to come in now because, and then there's more blanks to fill in. But I'm certainly not dumb enough to come in at all-time highs. Was it dumb at all-time highs to come in when the Dow for the first time hit 1,000? Well, it was for a few years. Did you time it to get back in at the right time? What about when it hit 2,000? Dumb to come in then? Or 3, or 5, or 6, or 10? Of course not. And we've got to give up on this idea that we can time it. I know you're smarter than, we're all collectively smarter than the Warren Buffett, Peter Lynch's, Michael Price, John Templeton's of the world. We're all smarter. They couldn't time it. But we can. And that's a comment you make. It's a statement you make. I can time this when you say, I'm going to wait. Wait for what? Down 5%? Is it down 10? You see, when we're down 10, we're all knowing it's going to go down 15 or 20 because it really looks crummy out there. And so we keep waiting and we keep waiting and we keep waiting. So it's a big statement when we say, I'm going to wait, I'm going to hold cash, and I'm going to lose money every year. So what do you do? Seriously. I've been sitting it out. What do I do? I've got a mountain of cash. Of course you can be cautious. But you have to get started. You have to start. This is not something that you can simply say, okay, I am going to be out. Until what? What event? How many points down? What percentage down? From what level? My point is literally Monday, you need to start and get in, get back in. And not just, but not now. You've been saying not now for thousands of points. Thousands of points. So here's what I think needs to happen. For all those people sitting on cash, it's the same story. It's the same story we've talked about for years. It's a story of getting started. Do something. Pick a number. Pick your poison, if you will. Number one, put it in, if you can. You can just convince yourself, you know what, I'm doing it. I'm back. Okay? Fine. Now you're back. You turn down, they will mark the top of the market, and then you'll feel like an idiot, okay? But it really wasn't that way when you would have thought of doing that thousands of points ago, right? So we don't know that. But the other way around it is to say, okay, fine, I'll put, let's say, 10%, or I'll put 25% in. And then I'll set up a regular investment plan, no matter what's going on in the world, no matter what scare things come across, no matter who you forward me the email at the end of the world and the, you know, how the dollar's collapsing on July 1st or whatever. Oh, yeah, it's July 5th now. Well, anyway, yesterday they took my dollars at the golf course. Weird, but they did. Weird, but they took them. They didn't take my rubles. They didn't take my yuan or whatever nonsense they're pushing. We'll talk about that later. And they're going to take my dollar bills tomorrow. Pick a number. No matter what you're reading, pick a percentage. I'm going to put in 10% every, let's call it every month. No, that's too quick. I want to put, okay, fine, every quarter. How about 5% every month? And then when the market falls a little bit and you don't want to do it because everything looks terrible, you stick to the plan. Getting back into owning the greatest increasing streams of income. They increase faster than the rate of inflation all the days of your life. That's the evidence. Or you can time it, keeping costs here or there with no rudder, no center, no plan. And read more. Read more online stuff. Try to get more data stuffed in so you can figure it out more. Or we can just take a step back and say, you know what, we've gotten this wrong. It's not all phony. Or even if it is, what's phony about making money? What's phony about the fact that the great corporations of the world are making more profits than they ever have in history? That they're paying out more in dividends than ever in history? That the corporate balance sheets are the best they've ever been in all of history? What's phony about that? You say the Federal Reserve is printing money, and when that quits, well, they have been quitting. They've been cutting back. I had a caller a few weeks ago, but Dick, you tell me, when that all stops and that still is going to all-time high, doesn't matter. The money has still been made. What's phony about that? What's phony about a normal correction that occurs periodically every year, 18 months? There's nothing phony about that. It happens all the time. There's nothing to be timed about that. That doesn't make the people who've been predicting bad markets correct, like a stopwatch. They're not right. Missing a move from 6,000 to 17,000 doesn't make you right if we pull back a little bit. It's wrong all the time, all the way. A bad news self. Get back in the game. That's all. Get back in the game. We've got to get back in the game. It's hard. It's hard, I know. It's harder for us as investment professionals to find great bargains out there. There are relative bargains. Stocks are relatively very, very cheap compared to bonds. But are the screaming bargains the way they were a few years back? Of course not. I know it's much harder. And when you've missed it, it makes it really hard to get in now. Really hard. So, figure out a plan that works for you. Figure out a way that works for you to get back. Because all of your life, all of the last 100 years, it's always been right to get in. To be in, to stay in, to stay in. And it's all these ideas, these crazy ideas that you can have stock market returns without stock market risk. No, you can't. You know that. And whenever anybody says that, aren't they listening to anything else they have to say? Because they're lying. We all know that. But when we're so worried about things, we're looking for things in the wrong places, right? We're looking for love in all the wrong places. We're looking for investments in all the wrong places. Don't hang out in a dive bar looking for false promises, right? Because in the morning, right, when you wake up, that's what you got, right? That's what you got. Now you got a product you can't get out of maybe for 10, 15, 20 years that won't work. Maybe in the name of fear, you continue to earn less than the rate of inflation, or you read articles online telling you that the world is ending on July 1st, or that Obama wants to take your money away, or whatever. Yeah, I hear most of them. I try to ignore them. And we continue to just kind of live in this weird world of believing every conspiracy theory that comes along, which keeps us out of the great corporations of the world. And the thing that has always worked better than anything else in the world to produce cost of living adjusted income that you can't outlive. Better than anything else. But we worry about little tiny price movements. We miss the whole picture. And the more we read, the more we dive into the minutiae, the noise, the further from the truth we find ourselves. Not only that, we are really uncomfortable, aren't we? Because we're afraid. Our number here is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's also Dave@petrofinancial.net. Love to take your calls. Shoot us an email. I am here live this hour, and would love to hear, you know, anybody's stories about why or how they can't seem to pull the trigger, or a way that they got themselves to pull the trigger and get back in the game when they've been knocked out. 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436 with Dave Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and again, thank you so much for joining us. I am live, and thank you again for allowing me to travel and enjoy some beautiful mountain weather and some time with my dad. So been a great 4th of July, and I hope your weekend has been relaxing and full of family events as well. So, hey, I want to address this just a little bit more, and I promise we'll get off of this dollar world-ending collapsing currency thing. But for those of you who, you know, are somewhat familiar with the internet, you know that there's a group out there, I don't know, they call them a company, I don't know, they're called Snopes, right? They review the legitimacy of claims on the internet. And so, you know, whenever we see these conspiracy things that come across, if you really insist on, you know, diving deeper for whatever reason into them, because you want to believe that the dollar is collapsing or are concerned that it's collapsing or what have you, at least check them out at Snopes. It's Snopes, SNOPES.com. There's actually a tremendous amount of information here on this group, or on the absurdity of this H.R. 2847 causing the dollar to collapse. And Stansberry and Associates, what they're selling. I thought they were just selling, you know, spots on their website to the gold bugs out there. That's what I thought it was. So, but it's not, and if they maybe get kicked out from that. I'm sure they do get that, but apparently their main gig is to sell the subscriptions to their illustrious newsletter, which of course has been always wrong. But for only $179 a year, since the dollar is collapsing and the world is ending as we know, let me grab the quick quote here off of this. But it's $149. Pardon me. Our normal way of life is going to end. So our normal way of life, and apparently, so all of this is happening. And the dollar is collapsing, but for only $149 of when your subscription to Stansberry Investment Advisory newsletter is mine. And I suppose that that's how I can navigate this and have a more normal life as we know it ending world. It'll come back. That's my point. So check these things out. It's not, it doesn't make any sense why nobody except them is putting an inch of ink in the papers. But it does sell, and I think it's important for us to recognize this is nothing more than a statement of our own abstract fear of the world and the uncertainty that it is. Are there problems? Of course there are. That there's not a conspiracy around every corner, there really is not. And second of all, you have to check these things out instead of just simply buying into the idea that somebody can run some terrible headlines. Okay? So let's just, if you want to look at it, check it out yourself. But I really think we're safely past July 1st in the implementation of this new law and the fact that the dollar is still being accepted at golf courses in McCall, Idaho. Certainly was yesterday. Okay, our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. You need and want your phone calls. We're here live and would love to visit with you, okay? Now, then the next thing I wanted to touch on is, of course, that with the Dow hitting 17,000, this was very interesting to me. There was absolutely not one single word about it in the United States. Not one. Now, I understand that the Statesman is not exactly the great, literary piece out there. It's certainly not full of, great insights. But I would think that this is something that would make the news. But it doesn't. And I'm not saying that's necessarily bad. It's not bad for us investors. Because if people continue to doubt this market like they have, for thousands of points, whatever they want to say, it's phony, it's whatever, right? It's about to go down. It's about to go down. Just like the next shooter drop, commercial real estate, the next shooter drop. Europe implosion. We had to pull up for that for 3 years in a row every spring that came up. As Europe is now set an all-time high. I know it's phony. But the money's not phony. And yet central bankers are pumping up the system. So what we have to do is we've got to play the game that's in front of us. Whether you like the game or not. Okay, so a quick analogy. So you have your game plan that you're going to throw the ball a lot in a football game. That's the plan. But then the weather changes, and instead of having a decent November day, it is going to be raining, muddy, it's slick, it's snowing, it's icy, whatever you want, but the conditions have changed totally. Do you stick with the game plan? Because by golly, you spend a lot of time thinking that way, and that's the way you think. That's the way we think. We think as a team we're going to pass the ball. That's what we're going to do. We're going to do short passes, we do long passes only. No, you change the plan. You change with the conditions around you. So money is cheap. Does it make sense to say the Federal Reserve shouldn't do this, by golly, by gosh, and put our fists and pound the table and say, it's all phony? Or do we acknowledge that, gosh, this seems to be helping corporations make lots of money because they can refinance their debt better? It seems like corporations are issuing debt and buying back stock and raising dividends like crazy. Maybe I should get part of that game. Or do we pound our fist on the table and decry whatever laws are being passed by that horrifying Obama and what he's trying to do? They're two different things. Stop him, yes, if you believe what he's doing is wrong. Do everything you can. But we have to acknowledge the conditions that are in front of us. Conditions that favor the great corporations of the world. Don't stand there and pound your fist and shake your fist at God, it's no point. There's no point. None. You're not right. You may have a better economic plan, but you're not right to sit out a boom in the market. It's called being wrong. Period. Period. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I need your phone call. Do bring us up, and we'll be right back after Fox News.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Our number is 580-5436. That's 580-KIDO. And thank you for putting up with me on the phone. I'm up here in beautiful McCall, enjoying some nice weather, and most importantly, enjoying some time with my dad, playing a little golf. And I hope you are having a great 4th of July weekend yourself. Let's go ahead and go to the phone. So let's go to George. George, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Dave, and I hope you're having a good time golfing.
Thank you. A great time, as a matter of fact, and obviously the weather is delightful. So, yes.
Hey, good. Hey, I wanted to share something with you. I read an article, a real short article the other day, about how good Aflac is with their dividends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me, I had a cousin we were visiting with about a year and a half ago. She just passed away earlier this year, but she was talking to us. We were visiting with her in Alabama, and she says, "Do you need some money?" She says, "I got lots of money." She says, "All those lovely dividends." And so I said, "Well, what in the world are you doing?" She said, "Well, my mother and my aunt had bought some Aflac stock when it was, I think it was first issued back in the early 70s sometime. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much she got, but I was looking at the stock splits and things like that, and by a year and a half ago when I was talking to my cousin, that stock had split and increased. It was 60 times the amount.
Yes.
She had 60 times the number of stocks that she had at the beginning. So I don't know what she had bought, but just kind of thinking about my aunt, what she would have done. She's a pretty savvy woman. She probably would have bought 500 or 1,000 shares, and I looked at it and out of curiosity calculated it out. So she must have been getting somewhere between, probably $4,000 or $5,000 every month off of those dividends. And looking at the stock price and the dividends on the Yahoo Finance site, it was a hockey stick example. I was thinking, that is exactly what Dave Petzo has been saying. And this is just one stock. This isn't Procter & Gamble and J&J and those other things. Just one stock.
Exactly. And I'm so glad you asked and you did that exactly. You go to that Yahoo Finance, is fantastic, and you go right in there and check all the dividends over time. It's phenomenal, isn't it?
It really was, yeah. It started off with just fractions of a cent, ended up, I think it's 37 cents a share now.
Really, percentage-wise, just an enormous. And after all the stock splits and everything, the rate of return for people that have held these great corporations for a few decades oftentimes is over 100% return every year.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was real interesting to me. I listened to portions of your first hour with Pastor Paul Hadfield.
Yep.
And talking about being generous, and I think that's kind of the way my aunt and my cousin, that's the way they lived their lives. They never lived high. Evidently, they made plenty of money, but they must have been generous with it. So it kind of warms my heart just thinking that they were doing the right. In fact, she sent me a really generous Christmas gift, which I didn't need, but it was really good. So anyway, I just wanted to let you know that and affirm what you've been saying all this time.
Well, George, thank you. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you. I'm glad you took the time to go on there and take a look and do some of your own contemplation of it, because that's when we really really see a different picture is when we actually spend some time, not just hearing it, but maybe delving into it a little like you did.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we appreciate you, and thanks a lot, Dave.
George, thank you for your call. You have a great 4th of July weekend. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And let's go ahead and go to our buddy Jim. Jim, are you there?
Morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Happy July 5th.
Happy July 5th to you, too.
You survived the 4th, I guess.
Yes, I did survive. I thrived on the 4th. I had a wonderful day. My dad and I just really had a great day out there playing golf. It was just a fun, you know, sometimes things click, and it just really clicked. So
it was
good.
Kind of quiet in my neighborhood. I mean, not too much blowing up. You know, it was kind of funny. I was thinking on July the 4th, the explosions happened before midnight. On New Year's Eve, they happened after midnight.
Yeah, it's true. So, you're right.
Anyway, I was going to mention, it just occurred to me, well, I mean, you're doing a bang-up job trying to convince people, you know, how things are, and basically fighting fear and all this kind of thing. And in the past, you've had a medical doctor on talking about men's problems, and you've had a pastor on. How about, I'll run this past you, how about a psychologist with a heavy background in economics? I think that would be definitely benefit, because what you're saying kind of is like putting a Band-Aid on a wound. I mean, you can tell people till you're blue in the face, but they've got, a lot of people have a real deep, whatever, problem.
Yes, they do. And Jim, it's a fantastic idea, and I'm sure we will, because behavioral science has been working on this problem, really, because it is a massive problem, just as you point out. You know, listening to me, unless you're just, you know, unless you're already somewhat, you know, astute with investments and you know the history of them, it just isn't going to change the dynamic of fear for most people. But unless we go into therapy, which obviously you're not in a radio program, but what I'm saying is this problem of how do we connect with people and not have them be freaked out about things there's really no reason to be freaked out about.
Yeah, a lot of people, I mean, if they're freaked out, they are just simply freaked out. And at least I've had, you know, experience in life having come along before the Internet. And you mentioned, you know, you remembered when the Dow was 1750 or whatever. I remember when it was 800. And when they were striving to get to 1,000 back in the
50s. Where it was when I started, Jim. 750, not 1750, 700.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that was when I started in 1980 is when I got my license, so yeah.
Well, back in those days, of course, I was just out of college, and the last thing I had was stock, and the last thing I wanted to invest in was stock. Because the thing is, when you're young, you just don't think about that. You know, you're too busy having fun with life. So anyway.
Right. That's true. You are. And at the same time, it's if you get some of those principles going, people, through their 401ks will save money. Through Roth IRAs, they'll begin to buy stocks and accumulate them. But yes, it is Jim, I think it's a great idea. And if I get a hold of a behavioral scientist, I will do that, because there really is a lot of data in our industry now. As we've talked about, the Dalbar study about how we misbehave with our investments so badly that we underperform the general mutual funds we buy and things like that by vast sums. So people have been working on this for a long, long time, and I think it's a great idea. So
well,
I will,
you know, you're right about the idea of, you know, the therapy. I mean, it's too simple of a thing to, you know, just have – talk about psychiatry on the radio. But anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up.
I appreciate it. Great idea.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks. You do the same.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIVO. Hey, before we take a quick break here, I wanted to also remind, you know, part of that whole psychological, if you will, makeup, the whole thought process is really this idea of going past the short term and into the long term. Even if you're older, meaning, look, maybe the long term isn't quite as long out there, question then becomes also, what are you trying to do with the money? If what you're doing is living off the income from the great corporations of the world, price doesn't matter. And they're also then dealing with passing on a legacy, whether it is trying to be generous, as Paul talked about, being generous to your church, your charities, your where you can be helpful to somebody. All of those things together. Why would we stop at some point in time not wanting our ability to be generous? Well, we don't. Nobody says, you know, I want to stop at this particular point. So if we're drawing income and we're getting income growing faster than the rate of inflation, as we had wanted to, then there really isn't this short-term thought. So we have to get away from a short-term world of buy, 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 sell, 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 do this quickly, think about options, should we do a long, short strategy, all of those things that are just noise. Also noise designed to drive, in many cases, to fear-based products, which are always super high commission products, by the way, meaning they won't work, but often designed to go that way. So if we can get away from that thought process that it really matters whether the Dow is at 17,000 today or a month from now it's at 16 or if it's 15 or 6 months from now it's down to 14, I don't know. Why does that matter? If we're primarily living off the income of the great corporations, well, the answer is it doesn't. As time goes by, they increase their income, then we get more. So it's not a question of price. If we can start grasping the stretching of time, to me, that's the psychological problem we have in the world today, is short-term thinking, short-term management, short-term fear. Everything is so short-term. In a world that requires instant information, instant gratification every second. Slow it down. Stretch the time. Stretch your horizon. And take your eyes off of the daily noise. We're going to take our final break. We'd love to hear from you at 580-5436. That's 580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Idaho's place is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. All right, so we've been circled all the way around the absurdity of the whacked-out dollar. And all the way back to the fact that, hey, Dow's at 17,000. How do we approach that as a good buy level, right? How can we think of that as a good buy level when we've perhaps had our cash sitting out the last double of the market or worse? And so as we look at that and we think about it over a long period of time, the question is how long can we get our mind to think? How far out? And stocks aren't the bargain they were. By definition, they're not. But what am I going to do with money besides put it with the great corporations of the world that pay me more right now than 10-year treasuries do, and certainly better than putting it in cash and earning zero? Or the reality is it doesn't earn zero. It loses the rate of inflation every year, so we have negative real returns. Because remember, it doesn't matter how much money you have. It matters that you have enough money to buy the things that you need. I like thinking of it, and we're trying to lengthen that time out, and I think that's one of the reasons that, for me, it's important from time to time to go back to the basics, to go back to when markets were, you know, what did they look like in the 1960s, in 1970? What were the great corporations in the world doing then? What were the dividends they were paying then? What does it look like if you put $10,000 into, you know, a mutual fund back What does that look like today? How much has it grown to? And we look at it, and we all say this, right? And again, I try to draw this picture, is the word picture, if you will. We all want that big chart, right? We want our lives to be looking like it's moving from the left side graph all the way up, right? We get that. Man, when I was born, the Dow was at this age. When I went to high school, it was at that price. And here we are, substantially higher, no matter how old you are, than it's ever been. I mean, the chart of your lifetime looks great. But we live in the squiggle. So how do I get the big chart and ignore the squiggle? That little time frame where all of the noise affects my thinking. It infects my thinking. It makes me behave wrong. What do I do? How do I change that? Can I change that? And I think the answer is you know, we're still drawn to the squiggle, the right now, the noise of today. But there are people like me, and I've met people like me, and there are lots of people like me. It's just that we're not normal. We don't just think about the squiggle. We don't worry about price so much, other than seeing price as opportunity. Volatility is opportunity, not the enemy. The squiggle is good for giving me the opportunity to buy bargains, to sell dearly. But for those of us that think over a longer period, no matter how old you are, I think of Warren Buffett's examples that he gave last year
at the at his annual shareholder meeting. In buying a business, buying a property, a farm, things like that. And when he talks about that, and he talks about the fact that in 1983, he bought a piece of real estate. He didn't buy it because he thought 6 months or a year later it was going to go higher. He bought it because of the income it was paying, looked like a good investment at the time. The location was good. It really would be very difficult to duplicate it, or impossible, frankly. And so, okay, this looks like a good investment. Not for 1993, but for the foreseeable, perhaps forever, thought process. About how doing that makes sense. Buying this property made sense. He talked about buying a farm, not because he was thinking that corn prices were going to go through the roof. He didn't think about whether he was going to flip the farm. All he thought about was, that looks like a good business to own, at a good price to own it. And he goes on, and I think it's really worth thinking about. But he goes on to talk about the absurdity of farmers deciding whether they should buy the next farm and sell the one they're on. Trading farms, like every year or every month or, wow, several times a day? Of course not. Nobody does that. And you don't think that way about a business. The great corporations of the world aren't run like that either. They don't think about, wow, I wonder if we could just somehow drive the stock price through the roof real quickly now, right here. No, they're trying to sell Tide and diapers, oil, that future. Filled over a 5-year period of time. Spending billions of dollars. For what? For what? For the future. For the long-range future. How do we operate our business that way? And all we're doing is tying into these long-lived operations. For the future. For their growing streams of income. Just like if we bought a building like Warren Buffett did. He bought a good business. He bought a good thing. A good asset. The farm was bought because it produced good income relative to the price. It looked like a good investment. Not a good flip. Price is important when we buy. Price is important when we sell. And in some cases, when great wealth is built and great growing streams of income, like George called about before, and his aunt had huge amounts of a great corporation that made increasing income all the days, then we just also have this huge opportunity to be very generous, leave a big legacy for family, for charity, for what have you. It is a tremendous opportunity because it just keeps growing and growing and growing. And that's what the great corporations have done historically. I know it's difficult because there is a lot of fear-mongering out there. There really is.
Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzl Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzl, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzl Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Petzl and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future results.